Epilogue. They asked Chromis to step outside while the vote was cast. Evening had begun to fall since she had made her case inside the Congress building, and although the sun was still catching the summit of the building, tinting the ice cap a hard, brassy gold, lights were coming on in the shadow-locked footslopes and inlets far below. The warm breeze on the balcony was a carefully maintained fiction. It felt as if it was blowing up from the tropical landscape 22 kilometers below, carrying a delicate freight of spices from the fishing villages around the nearest shore of the Great Lake. But the balcony was in fact shielded from the ambient atmospheric conditions by an invisible shell of femto machinery, which also happened to provide protection against almost all conceivable modes of assassination. Admittedly, there hadn't been a documented assassination inside the Congress of the Lindblad Ring for 3,500 years, but there were still dissident elements out there. Just ask the good citizens of Hemlock, after the Reeves had been sent in to restore public order. Chromis wondered how the vote was going inside the meeting room. She felt, on balance, that her speech had been received about as well as she had dared to hope. She had not deviated from her script. She had not stumbled or lost her rhythm. Rudd had come in on cue with perfect timing and had played his role with conviction. No one had tried to trump her with some other equally lavish proposal, and none of her habitual enemies had voiced any criticism while she was in the room. Doubtless a certain reverence had held them back. In criticizing Chromis, they would have been implying that they did not consider the benefactor's deeds worthy of commemoration. She had counted on that, but was nonetheless relieved. Still, she hadn't received an ovation either. Even as she stepped out of the room, she had still found the delegates' collective mood inscrutable. Their lack of questions, their lack of antagonism, might even have suggested bored indifference. She hoped not. Chromis had allowed for many things, but it had never occurred to her that her proposal might crash on the rocks of moderate apathy. Not for the first time since starting her journey to New Far Florence, she felt the benefactor's quiet presence, as if Bella Lind stood silently next to her on the balcony, as keen to know the outcome as Chromis. It was, she supposed, impossible to spend so long thinking about a single person without them assuming a degree of reality, and she doubted that anyone had thought as long and hard about Bella Lind as she had during all the centuries of preparation. Once, the benefactor had been a distant schematic historical figure. Now she was a tactile person whom Chromis felt as if she had met on many occasions. The more strongly this sense of solidity took hold, the more she vowed not to fail the ghost that her imagination had conjured into being. Overhead, the brightest stars were coming out. The glare from the sunlit ice cap washed out any hope of seeing the Milky Way, but Chromis knew roughly where to look. Somewhere out there, she thought, Bella was waiting. Doors opened behind her. She turned to see Rudd walking towards her, carrying news from the delegates. She studied the hard set of his expression and felt her imaginary companion slip away politely, leaving them alone.
"It's not good news, is it?"
"I'm sorry. It nearly went your way, but..." He offered the palms of his hands.
"Tell me."
43 ayes, 49 nays, 7 abstentions.
"Damn.
You came close, Chromis. It wasn't an overwhelming defeat, not by any means. There'll be another chance."
"I know, but... damn."
Disappointment hit her in slow, soft waves rather than a single crushing onslaught. "You've planted the seed now. All you have to do is hope that it takes root in 6 delegates.
I was hoping to win them over on this round, Rudd. I never expected it would be so close. I always thought in terms of majestic defeat or total storming victory. Either way, I'd have been able to walk out of there with my work done, heading back home either with my tail between my legs, the tragically vanquished hero, or as champion. Instead, I'm faced with this messy compromise."
"That's reality for you," Rudd said, always pissing on the epic moment.
"How am I going to win them over?"
"With iron will and stubborn determination." He looked at her with horrified incomprehension. "You didn't come all this way to give up, did you?"
"I suppose not."
"The benefactor wouldn't have given up."
"I know."
He joined her by the balcony rail and gave her a brief consolatory hug. "I think we need to work on the guilt angle.
It's all very well pointing out to them how noble and civic this scheme of yours will make us all feel, but that'll only work on some of them. To win the rest of them over, I think you need to emphasize how the future will view us if we fail. Remind them that, if history's any guide, one day there won't be a Congress of the Lindblatt Ring, just records of our deeds. Perhaps it was some brief fluctuation in the femtotech bubble shielding the balcony, but she could have sworn that she felt a breath of the evening's true chill touch her flesh. That's pretty close to heresy, Rudd, especially when we're supposed to be gearing up to celebrate our very permanence. 10,000 years is just a pebble tossed into eternity's canyon, Chromis. All right, all right. I'll work on the guilt angle. Good girl. And you might want to think about approaching someone else to act as your tame devil's advocate next time. I'd be happy to oblige, but I don't think they'll tolerate our little parlor game twice. You're probably right. Chin up. You've done very well, considering. You think so? Absolutely. I'm pretty sure you've already knocked some of the competition out of the running. That's the last we'll hear about fountains. That's something, anyway. The blood thing worked well. I've been thinking, Chromis said, as an idea began to form in her mind. That point I had you make about a copy of the message falling into the wrong hands? What of it? There's something more to that. Keying the message to the benefactor's DNA is a good precaution, and I didn't go all the way to Mars for nothing. But we could probably use an additional safeguard. Go on, Rudd encouraged. I think each copy of the message, in whatever form it takes, ought to be able to decide for itself whether or not to divulge its contents. That'll demand a degree of intelligence, enough to grasp the ins and outs of human behavior, so that the copy can base its decisions on what it sees. In other words, it'll need to be human as well. It's within our means, Rudd. Looking at it this way, it would be almost negligent not to equip the message copies with full sentience. Rudd pondered this for long moments, while Chromis watched the shadows below turn a deep, mysterious purple. More and more communities were lit up against evening now, and small boats were plying across the lake, bright and colourful as paper lanterns. I think I agree, he said, but there's an obvious stumbling block. Who would ever consent to having their personality copied into a billion green bottles like some cheap, mass-produced commodity? I'm sure a volunteer could be identified. He nodded knowingly, and I bet you have just the candidate in mind. I'll cross that bridge when I win. Remember, play on their guilt works every time. Should have reminded you of that before, really. Might have helped, Rudd. Then at least we could have gone out celebrating tonight. Oh, that won't stop us. We can always celebrate the fact that we weren't defeated by an overwhelming margin. She smiled, something of her former good mood returning. Any old excuse. He looked in the direction of one of the lakeshore communities. In fact, I know this really great place. We can call there now, if you like. Shouldn't I go back inside and face the music? I think a dignified silence might work better. Let that guilt start eating away at them. If you say so. I know so. Years of experience at this sort of thing. Rudd closed his eyes for the moment it took to summon a pair of calls. Shortly, the local femtotech would allocate a small fraction of itself for the safe conveyance of the two friends. While they waited, Chromis asked, "Do you really mean it? About the Congress not lasting forever?" "Like I said, 10,000 years really isn't all that long. I'm sure the Spikens expect it to last forever too. But one day the same thing will happen to us. We'll be gone, and there'll be something else in our place. Something human?" "Not necessarily." The calls arrived, orbiting them like a squadron of black moths before meshing into their final travel configuration. Sensing that a conversation was in progress, the calls waited for a decent pause before snatching the two people from the balcony. "Then all this," Chromis said, gesturing at the vista before them, "everything we've lived for and made, everything we've dreamed into existence, you firmly believe it won't always be here. It'd be egocentric to think otherwise. Almost every sentient being who ever lived belonged to a society that doesn't exist anymore. Why should we be any different? But our deeds will remain. If we're lucky, there's every chance they won't survive either." "That's so bleak, Rudd." "Bracing, I prefer to think. But if nothing we do here has any guarantee of lasting, if even the best gestures have only a slim chance of outliving us, Is there any reason not to just give up? Every reason in the world, Rudd said. We're here and we're alive. It's a beautiful evening on the last perfect day of summer. He turned and nodded at the waiting calls. Now let's go down there and make the most of it while it lasts. This concludes Pushing Ice. Please visit our website, www.tantor.com, for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of our special offers. Or call toll-free 877-7-TANTOR to request a catalogue.